This is the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Dan Strauss and Ian Geiser here with me now. And Max Foisy joins us now as a new contributor for the Showbiz Show, which we do in the 4 o'clock hour every Friday.
I've got some big galoshes to fill.
Yes, you do.
Colin Jeffrey, friend of ours.
Yes, he is.
Great guy.
Yes.
And
he'll never talk to us again, though, because he now works in television.
It's true.
Yeah. He's moved up. Until he comes back and works here again.
Right.
As they all do.
He was texting me angry that I'd done a good job on Tuesday with Frank. So, that's good, right?
Was it all caps?
He'd be a little excitable.
So what do we have to review this week? I have not been going to some movies because it's February, which is usually the junkiest movie month of the year. The second place goes to August, but February usually holds that title. But, you know, it actually seemed like it was doing okay with John Wick Chapter 2 last weekend.
It's probably the best movie that I've seen this year, which is not a high bar.
Because it's only February.
We're only a couple of weeks in, but August, for my money, is probably a worse month because they know that the summer blockbusters are over,
yeah,
and they know that the award season ones are right around the corner. And
that's, right.
They don't know what to do with August. You have so many strange releases in August. You have Halloween movies that come out in August because they don't know what else to do.
Yeah.
You have romantic comedies that they thought would be good for Christmas that randomly come out in August. February is actually starting to turn around a bit. About, what, 4 or 5 years ago, we had the Lego movie, so they decided to release Lego Batman in this time.
Which won the box office last weekend.
Doing gangbusters. My 5-year-old went to see it on a class field trip, which is strange, but good for them, I suppose, in kindergarten. And the kids loved it.
Kindergartners are going on field trips now to the movies?
I would like to go see a movie for a KTRS field trip. I don't know why we're not doing that. How come the 5-year-olds get it? Anyway, they liked Lego Batman. But yeah, John Wick 2 is phenomenal, especially if you've seen John Wick and you like that world. It's a really fantastic movie.
But you told me before we went on the air today that you also went to see the other movie that opened last weekend, which is 50 Shades Darker.
So every once in a while, I miss a critic screening, and I do what I like to call a double feature, which is when I go see the screening that is for that week, like The Great Wall, which we'll be talking about pretty soon. But then I hang around. I use my patented critic's pass, and I go see a late movie of whatever I missed. So I've done this a lot, and it's always fun. I like going to see movies. Spending a couple of hours in a movie theater is a very fun time for me. I didn't think this one through.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so you purposely chose, you made a conscious choice. Well, what movie am I going to see? I'm going to go see that 50 Shades sequel.
You know, I saw 50 Shades of Grey. I reviewed it. Did you like it? I did not. It's not a good movie.
But so why did you go to the sequel?
I'm a completist, Paul. And so I thought I have to watch all of these movies. And so I thought, well, I'm just going to catch up on the movie that I missed last week. I didn't think it through because I used my pass. I got the ticket. I decided to get a soda. And as I'm walking into a 10 o'clock p.m. showing of this, with my big black leather coat on, you know, it's a little chilly outside. I'm walking up past all the couples. I'm walking alone, solo,
yeah,
past all the gaggle of women who are there together,
yes,
and I am getting looks.
Uh-huh.
Like, who is this guy just who decided to come
Pee-wee Herman
alone?
Coming in here.
Yes. He's wearing this big coat. It's 10 o'clock at night. And I, oh my Lord, I wanted to tell everybody there, I'm a critic. I'm doing this for work. But nobody would have cared.
No.
So anyway, I did bite the bullet, so to speak, and watch 50 Shades Darker.
Anyway.
Interesting euphemism there.
I will say.
He's biting the bullet.
I will say that while these are not good movies, and that this one, at least in its defense here, the sequel embraces the campy ridiculousness that the first one should have. The first one tried to be very racy, like, look at us, we can't. It was not racy. It was kind of milquetoast. This one, at least, because they can't just shock you with the S&M storyline. They've already done that. So in this one, they bring Kim Basinger. That's pretty good casting because 9.5 weeks. She's a mysterious person from Christian Grey's past, and somebody pulls a gun on somebody. And it's all very Cinemax, and I sort of enjoyed how goofy it was,
mm-hmm,
as opposed to that first movie.
Okay, so on this show, we rate movies on a 0 to 10 scale.
Oh, wow. That's a wide berth.
Yes, it is. So what would you give 50 Shades Darker?
Boy, if I gave the first 50 Shades a 1, I'd give this one a 2, which means it's a better movie than the first
so
one.
So if they make 8 more sequels, they'll have a 10.
By the next one, we might get into the 3 or 4s. I mean, who knows? We might be approaching average. I don't know.
Now, yeah. Is that a true story, Max?
Yes, actually, this is a true story.
It is?
The 50 Shades movies, or the books, actually started out, this is true, Dan, as Twilight fan fiction.
Really?
This young lady over in England, she decided to write about Bella Swan and Edward Cullen, but she took out the vampirism and added the BDSM lifestyle. All of a sudden, Fifty Shades of Grey.
Okay.
Hmm.
We're making fun of it. And how much money has she made off of her books?
Much more than I will be ever making in my entire life.
So the phrase you're looking for is a gazillion.
I'll also say this, Paul. Pretty soon we're going to talk about The Great Wall.
Yes.
50 Shades Darker might be more enjoyable.
Uh-oh. Well, then let's jump right into it. Because as good as it is to talk about really, really good movies, it's even better to talk about really bad movies. And I smell the scent of a stinker.
Yes, you would be correct in that. Your nose knows that The Great Wall is a stinker. Let's talk about the controversy that isn't there first about the movie, and that's the whitewashing claims about this movie. When people saw that it was set in China in the 11th century and there's Matt Damon, they thought, why is a white guy over there? And there were all these claims about whitewashing. If the audience doesn't know what that is, it's a term that's been bandied about for a couple of years now in Hollywood. And it's a real thing. It's when you take a character or a role that should be played by an actor of African-American or Asian descent, yes, then it's recast as a white person.
Probably, Emma Stone as an Asian person in Aloha.
Probably the most egregious version of this is a movie called 21. I don't know if you guys saw 21.
Yes.
It was a true story about Asian MIT students, and they cast a bunch of white people in the movie.
Yeah, although in real life, not all the students were Asian.
Really?
Yes.
Huh. Well, in the movie, at least one of them was. So they at least, maybe they're trying to hedge their bets. Hedge their bets?
Yeah, no? See what you did there.
Vegas?
Nice.
Well, the claims of whitewashing in The Great Wall are not founded because this movie is primarily a Chinese production. It's got a Chinese cast. It's got a Chinese director. And they make it clear that Willem Dafoe and Matt Damon are Westerners who have come looking for black powder, which, of course, is gunpowder. That's what we would know that now.
Right.
So I wouldn't even I would say that there's plenty of negatives about this movie. That's not one of them.
Okay, but the controversy may not just be about whitewashing, which is, as you said, when you put a white person in the role of an ethnic minority and pretend there's no difference there.
Sure.
There's also something called the white savior film problem.
Absolutely.
Which is when you have movies like Michelle Pfeiffer as the white teacher in Dangerous Minds, who she's the only one who can connect with the black students in the room because she can rap. Remember that piece of trash?
Oh, yes.
There was
Finding Forrester with "You're the Man Now, Dog." One of my favorite lines of dialogue ever, where Sean Connery says that to
He's
Buster
the only
Rhymes.
One who can relate to Buster Rhymes because
"You're the Man Now, Dog."
Yeah, or you know what? How about The Help? I mentioned Emma Stone.
Yes.
Emma Stone, Jessica Chastain, they're the stars of that movie. No, Viola Davis and Octavia Spencer should have been looked at as the stars of the movie. It's their story, but we had to see it through the white person's eyes. I'll give you another example. Dances with Wolves.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's the story of the lamentation of what it was like to be an American Indian living out on the plains as the American cavalry was trying to move across and claim more of the West, and what it was like to be a member of the Lakota Sioux. Not only did they have Kevin Costner as the sensitive white cavalry member, they also had to have a white woman, Mary McDonnell, in the Lakota Sioux so that we could all connect to them that way, too.
And, of course, you have Avatar, where they don't even have the decency to cast an actual alien. They've got Sam Worthington trying to get with all the blue Smurfs in Avatar. I mean, come on now.
Yeah, I've also heard this said about Glory. With, Matthew Broderick and Carrie Elwes to help tell the story.
Oh, that one hurts me because I love that movie.
I do, too. And I actually don't think it fits that one because there were white commanders in charge of black regimental units. And, yes, you did have Denzel Washington and Andre Brower and some other terrific African-American actors in there. But it was based on a real situation.
Right.
Not like with Dances with Wolves and The Help and the others.
This is going to shock you, Paul. The Great Wall is not based on a true story.
No?
No.
What?
I'm sorry, Dan. I'm very sorry.
Oh.
This one concerns the real reason behind the construction of the Great Wall. You might think, well, it's the Mongolians or, tax issues or invasion. No. Monsters. It was monsters.
I'm sorry?
That's what, yes. Not even really cool dragons that could fly over the wall. We're talking dog monsters. These look like some sort of weird version of canines with eyes on their legs for some reason.
What?
So China says, we're
not
dealing
with this. I will tell you, when you were talking about canine monsters, yes. I'm envisioning the ones that Rick Moranis and Sigourney Weaver turned into at the top of the building in Ghostbusters.
They don't look unlike Zool. Nobody ever asked if anybody else is the Keymaster, but they don't look unlike that. I was trying to find another pop culture reference, and you're right, that they do kind of look like Gozer and those dog monsters from Ghostbusters. So Matt Damon is a mercenary, and Pedro Pascal is his fellow mercenary. They have accents of indeterminate nature. Damon seems to come and go. Sometimes he's Irish. Sometimes he's Bostonian. I don't know what he was trying to do with this. I think his level of caring was pretty low.
Did he at any point call it a wicked wall?
He did call it. He said, that's a wicked wall. Now, the wall itself is pretty impressive. They built it to scale. It obviously has real life extras running around. But they tell you that a millennia ago, because of mankind's greed, a green asteroid hit the planet and unleashed these dog monsters, which appear every 60 years. With eyes on their legs.
Whoa. Hold on a second. The asteroid came to Earth because of mankind's greed.
This is how it's explained, that mankind got a little too big for its britches.
There was a moral compass on the asteroid, it was searching through the universe for a place to land, and once it heard about how we were so greedy on Earth, it said, let's go to that planet, and we'll unleash the dog monsters there.
So the dog monsters have this queen dog monster, sort of like a queen bee, who looks sort of similar, but a tiny bit bigger, and she controls them in some sort of weird hive mind. And the Chinese are pretty weird with it at this point. They've been dealing with this every 6 years, right? So they're like, we got this. We built a wall. We've got archers all dressed in red. We've got aerialists dressed in blue. These are basically primitive bungee jumpers who act with pulleys and levers to jump off and stab the dog monsters.
Okay.
And when Matt Damon gets there to steal gunpowder, basically, they don't really need him there. He's really good with a bow and arrow, but I got the feeling they'd be just fine without this Westerner. He kind of just gets in the way.
That's your white savior film complex there.
And at the end of the film, let's say that the dog monsters are vanquished, for the sake of argument. It's not made clear if they're only vanquished for 60 more years. It's not like mankind's not greedy anymore, right? Hey, victory. But does that mean
after we got rid of those dogs, we learned our lesson and we'll never be greedy again.
Just put it on the calendar another 60 years. Like, glad we got through that one. I don't know. It made no sense.
Okay.
It made no sense. I pointed out this is primarily a Chinese production. That means that most of your cast is Chinese. Most of the dialogue is told through subtitles as well. So I know there's a lot of people who I don't mind reading, but an action movie especially, I think that's going to turn off a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to make a big monster movie, I love big monster movies, stuff like Godzilla, Kong, Skull Island is coming out soon. That one looks like it's a whole lot of fun. You owe it. You only have one directive. Give me cool monsters.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
And so if you're going to tell me the Great Wall of China was actually constructed to keep out monsters, I want to be blown away. I want to see some radioactive breath or some surprise wings or some sort of weird, like, velociraptor action. These monsters do nothing.
Growing fangs, anything.
Something.
Yes.
Maybe speaking English at some point, like, oh, yes, we're here because
they have eyes on their legs.
They do. That's brick, their one thing.
Yeah, yeah, brick melting skills, maybe.
Something really cool. Right. Yes.
Yeah,
like
chisel. You want to see one of them do the Copperfield pass through.
Yeah.
Dog was looking up my dress.
So they do nothing. It can't even give you cool monsters. So when you add that to the fact that the script feels like it was written in Chinese and then translated to English and then translated back to Chinese, you have complete exchanges between characters that don't really make any kind of sense. It's not even still the dialogue. They don't make any sense. It's like, go to the kitchen right now. Great, I'll be on the front lines. What's happening?
So you feel like you're in a nail salon getting a pedicure or something.
Well, you know, have you ever bought anything that was electronic and it obviously was not written in English, but it was translated from what the original language was English for that part of the fold-out paper, and you look through it and you go, I don't understand how I can make this work.
Yes.
It's not possible. That's what this dialogue is like?
That's what this is. Now, it's mercifully short. It's, you know, just over an hour and a half. It's PG-13, but I wouldn't bring the kids just because I think they're going to be bored. There are great action movies for kids. I mean, Lego Batman is one of them. Or just wait till Star Wars comes out. There's really no reason. I don't even think this will do well in China.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you.
Obviously is what they're banking on.
That's what I wanted to ask you, because we've talked on this show over the last couple of years about the increasing influx of Chinese money to Hollywood. Mm-hmm. because they want to have movies that they can show over there. And the Chinese government controls the movies that are there. And a lot of American movies don't get shown there, not just because they won't translate, but because the government is offended by some element of it, or it doesn't have any connection to China, which they want, which is why you have all of these things that are stuck in the middle of movies that don't seem like they need to be there.
There are a lot of people there. There's a lot of money to be made. That's all that Hollywood cares about.
Right.
We all know businesses who care about money more than anything else.
So is this made really to appeal to the Chinese demographic?
I think so. And I think the inclusion of Matt Damon isn't even to appeal to the Chinese demo, to say, look, an American movie star, that's just to get you and I in there. I mean, really, this is a movie made and marketed for the Chinese market. But we've seen this little by little. I mean, in Iron Man 3, there was a prominent Chinese actor who had a pretty major role, and that seemed to confuse people. In the last Transformers movie, there was a whole third act that took place in China, which made no sense for the rest of the movie, but they did that for that market.
Look at Arrival. It had that that Chinese general who's part of the heroic team that helped save them.
The
Martian.
The
Martian. They had to get help from the Chinese.
They were instrumental.
Yes.
And the beginning of Through the Looking Glass, the last Alice in Wonderland movie, Alice comes back from this tour of China and is dressed in like a kimono-type outfit and spins the opening of the movie saying how great China is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, well, this is obviously pandering.
Yes.
I don't know how much longer this will go on, but if movies like The Great Wall are not successful, I don't see it lasting at least to this level.
Not successful here or not successful there?
There. Because that's what they're going to care about.
Yeah.
Now I don't. Perhaps I'm wrong. I'm a bad prognosticator of what will be popular. I don't think this is good enough to be popular over there. I really don't. I think that even the Chinese audience will roll their eyes at these dog monsters. I mean,
you mean cross their legs? That's where their eyes are.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
I can't see.
That's more clever than anything in the movie.
All right, 0 to 10 scale for The Great Wall.
Oh my lord, I'm gonna give it a 1.
Wow,
we already have a nominee for worst of the year.
50 Shades Darker was better than The Great Wall. I gave it a 2, so I have to give it a 1.
You know, like a 5 is like right in the middle. It's
Sure.
I was like, okay,
I would not waste your time with The Great Wall.
Time or money. When we come back, I'm going to tell you about a magician's documentary that's available on Netflix now, and we've got some other showbiz stuff to get to as well as we continue along here on the Big 550 KTRS.
Is this going to go?
Spoiler alert!
Hey.
Yes, it is, Dan. It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. That's Dan Strauss. That's Ian Geis. That's Mac Foisey. And I am Paul Harris. And we're talking about showbiz. If you missed it, Max just gave The Great Wall, the new Matt Damon movie, a 1 on a scale of 10.
Do we keep track of these things? Do we, like, in a year, you say, well, you only gave The Great Wall a 1.
Well, you
is
should,
Ian, like, writing these down?
No, you should keep a list for yourself, because at the end of the year, we'll do our best and worst, and you want to keep a running list.
You know, I've got people to do that for me, Paul. I'll just have, Dan do it.
You have people.
I may have gotten ahead of myself. I should have said, if you're here at the end of the year.
Sure.
Because it's possible we might be doing best and worst movie reviewers.
And what would you give a Max Foisey? What would you give a Colin Jeffrey? What a Tom O'Keefe? What would you give a Tom?
There's a documentary that's available on Netflix now called Magicians: Life in the Impossible. I actually donated some money to the Kickstarter campaign to get this thing going. I think I gave him $50. Because I know people in the world of magic, and I've become very close to some people who do it very, very, very well, none of whom are in this movie. It's a documentary that focuses on 4 magicians, and you've never heard of any of them. One guy's named John Armstrong, who does phenomenal close-up card magic and writes books and lectures and tours. Another one is named Brian Gillis, who you may have seen back in the 80s on the Carson show. He did, I don't know, a dozen or more appearances with Carson, and now it's years later, and he's dyeing his hair and trying to keep his career alive. There's another guy named David Minkin, who's a pretty good magician who wanted to get on a TV show. He just really wanted to do magic on TV, and he actually did get onto a series that was on the Travel Channel back in 2013 with a friend of mine named Chris Korn and another guy named Ben Seidman. The three of them were the Magic Outlaws, and they would go around to places in different cities and, you know, do...
Where magic has been outlawed.
Well, they would do street magic for people, or, you know, sometimes it was in a restaurant, not on a street. And they're all very, very talented, and they did great stuff, but I think the show was on like three episodes, and that was the end of it. And then the fourth one, who's featured in this, is a guy by the name of Jan Ruven, who was a stage illusionist in Las Vegas. He had a show. When they made this movie, his show was at the Riviera, a casino that does not exist in Vegas anymore. And at the end of the movie, he gets moved into a new gig at the Tropicana, and he's playing there. But they finished this movie a couple of years ago, and they didn't include this little tidbit. Even in the end, you could have put this in the postscript when you made the movie. Last November, Jan Ruven pleaded guilty to possessing, receiving, and distributing thousands of images and videos of child pornography. You think you might want to put that in the movie, or you may want to wish that we had made the documentary for another year or so.
You might want to take him out of the documentary at that point.
You might. What's interesting about watching this movie is it doesn't really show enough magic being performed, or more importantly, it doesn't show them preparing to do the tricks and practicing the tricks and explaining how they do the tricks. And I know there's this whole thing about you never give away the tricks, but if it's a magician documentary called Life in the Impossible, I want to know some of that stuff. I don't need the masked magician. Remember that guy from 20 years ago on Fox who gave away magician secrets? And there was always a voiceover that talked like this.
And he was never heard from again. I mean, all those magicians spirited him away.
That guy was named Valentino, and you're right. He went away and has never done a gig since. But I still would have liked to have had some of that from these people who, you know, the thing about a good magician is... there's an enormous amount of practice that goes into even the simplest coin trick or card trick. Forget about the giant stage illusions, you know, where there's a clear plexiglass box, we cover it up, we uncover it immediately, and there's a beautiful blonde in there. You know, that all of that sort of stuff, it takes an enormous amount of rehearsal, an enormous amount of practice, an enormous amount of timing. You got to work up the patter that you're going to do for that. I wish they had included some of that in there. The people who are in this... you really just see them living mundane lives, struggling to get from one gig to the next to make enough money to pay the rent. Literally, in the case of at least two of them, they're just like other semi-successful people in the business. You know, they live their lives, and there's not really anything compelling going on in this movie. So, again, I contributed to helping make it get it made.
Did you ask for some of your money back?
I didn't even get a copy of the movie.
Yeah. What was your perk? Nothing?
I think I was supposed to get a DVD copy of the movie. They have not sent me one yet. I don't know.
They just made it disappear.
I don't know. I don't know that this was ever projected onto a screen anywhere. Oh, it was probably in a couple of film festivals. It is on Netflix now, and if you're into magic, well, what am I saying? I'm not going to recommend it. It's not worth your time.
Especially somebody like you who is really into magic.
Yeah.
I can't imagine... anybody that's not that into magic wanting to
see. Yeah,
probably watched the show that Penn and Teller did on television. I think it was a mid-season replacement. They had it over the holidays. It was called Fool Us.
Yes, it's been on the last couple of seasons. They did it in England for one season, and then it came to America. It's coming back again this summer.
They did a great job in not spoiling the trick, but letting the magicians know if they knew how it was done.
Correct.
And I was so... impressed by when Penn Jillette would say, well, one person could do XYZ, and they would know.
And they would use a code word that only magicians know.
And I was blown away by that.
Yes.
Those parts of the show were way more interesting than whatever the trick was.
Although,
just watching them talk.
But I liked seeing some of these great magicians who you've never heard of from all over the world coming and doing this, and they're getting a primetime showcase for an hour to do magic on television. Like I said, I'm into magic, so I enjoy that. Like Fool Us. Fool Us, by the way, 25 times better than this movie, Magicians.
Okay. All right. Okay.
So I'm giving it a 2 on a scale of 10. So I'm not recommending you watch that. I am going to recommend again, however, something that's on Amazon Prime, streaming now. It's a series called Sneaky Pete. I talked about this about a year and a half ago when Bryan Cranston first made the pilot for this series. And then They put it on Amazon Prime, and apparently they got enough good feedback that it became a 10-episode series. I just finished watching the 10th episode of this. It is really good. Bryan Cranston is in it. Giovanni Ribisi is in it. It's a con man show with Margot Martindale and a couple of other character actors who you will recognize, you've seen through the years. It's really clever. It's really good. I'm a sucker for con men movies. Not for con men, but for con men movies and TV shows, and this is very well done. If you have Amazon Prime, put this on your watch list. It's called Sneaky Pete. It's definitely worth your time. And one other TV-related thing I have to mention here. Nick Cannon has announced he is quitting America's Got Talent because he feels that NBC is upset with him over some things he said on his recent Showtime comedy special about how he can't talk like he really talks on NBC. And on the Showtime show, he talks about how, you know, he drops the N-word and the MF-word and all this sort of stuff. And he says, no, I can't do that on NBC. I can't talk like that because that would mess up the white money. Now, it's possible that NBC wasn't happy with him talking about this. But does anybody watch America's Got Talent for Nick Cannon? Who cares who the host of that show is? All he does is introduce the act, and then he stands off to the side, and they have a shot of him making a face when somebody does something on stage. Right. That's amazing.
That's like Carson Daly on The Voice. Nobody cares if Carson Daly's there.
Carson Daly's on The Voice?
See? Exactly. So, nobody cares.
So, yeah. And so he's making a big deal. Oh, NBC is censoring me. No, I think NBC realized, why are we paying this idiot? We could have a voiceover person introduce these acts and have him come out and be judged by, who are the judges on that show now?
You have Heidi Klum, you have Mel B, Howie Mandel, and...
Simon Cowell. He's back on TV judging people.
Can I just say
again
that I love that you said Mel B, and everybody's just like, oh yes, we know who that is. Because the Spice Girls are in the public content. I just love that, though, that you can just say that, you know, and everybody knows who that is.
I'm a fan of Mel B.
I like Mel B toast.
Yeah, she's delicious.
Oh, yeah.
I was more of a Mel C person.
Any other showbiz stuff you wanted to get to, Max?
So, The Cure for Wellness is a movie that is in theaters this week, and neither of us saw it. It's the latest from director Gore Verbinski, who people know him from his bigger budget movies like the Pirates of the Caribbean movies or the ill-advised Lone Ranger movie. But he started making a name for himself with his American remake of The Ring, which I think is a really effective horror film. And this one looks just as creepy as that one. Carney actually had Jason Isaacs on today, and he has a role in that movie.
But yes, I did.
And again, as well. There you go. As well. We had Jason Isaacs as well. But 20th Century Fox has apologized for creating fake news sites as part of the digital marketing campaign for A Cure for Wellness. This, to me, is more interesting because of the commentary on the state of things in 2017 than this kind of viral marketing. Years ago, when The Dark Knight came out, there were all kinds of fake news stories all over the internet and on your phone, and you could read about the Joker held up a bank. Of course, Blair Witch Project was put on the map because people said these kids died, and people flipped out about that.
Yep.
Well, so here, they went a little more elaborate here with news stories claiming that Trump met with Putin and they're planning something, and when you clicked on it, it would go to a website for Cure for Wellness. So it was sort of, it wasn't just fake news, it was a point and click, exactly. And people got all bent out of shape, especially when some...
Whoa. Who got bent out of shape about this?
Some less than reputable news sources decided to click and link to these stories, saying, look, Trump is meeting with Putin. Here's our proof. And it's an ad for Cure for Wellness. So,
well, I give the people who did the marketing campaign for A Cure for Wellness a big thumbs up for understanding how to make things go viral.
The studio spokesperson has said, we have reviewed our internal approval process, meaning somebody's been fired, that's what that means, and made appropriate changes to ensure that
no,
we sincerely apologize.
No, don't apologize!
This means people have been fired over this.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
I would give them a raise. Are you kidding me? If somebody came in there and said, look, we want to create something that'll go viral, that'll get a lot of attention. You did that. It got a lot of attention. Nobody was hurt.
It's the most anybody's talked about A Cure for Wellness. That's for sure, which is what you want people to do, is talk about your movie. And this is the most people have talked about it because of this story.
By the way, I saw the trailer for this movie. It looks horrible.
I think the trailer looks good.
You do?
So there.
Well, maybe that'll be your sneak into a movie next week.
Yes, that'll be my my double feature next week. One for 50 Shades Darker. I mean Cure for Wellness. Sorry. I just keep seeing 50 Shades every week. Yeah. That's what happened.
And what about the other movie that's opening this week, Fist Fight?
Fist Fight. Yes, this kind of reminds me of like a 12 o'clock high or 3 o'clock high, rather, the old 80s movie. But this is teacher-on-teacher violence, and it's got Charlie Day from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, very funny actor, and Ice Cube, who has just had one of the most inexplicable careers of anybody in history.
Yeah.
Going from somebody who is targeted by the FBI to a family comedy.
A member of NWA who has his story told in the Compton movie.
Yes, and, Compton.
And then has a series of hit movies with the Barbershop movies.
And family films like Are We There Yet? And becomes a family film executive, and now he's doing these comedies. Like, I mean, I love Ice Cube.
Is it him in Ride Along?
Yes. Yeah, with Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. No, I love Ice Cube, and he wrote Friday, which is one of the great comedies.
Very funny.
Yeah,
very
and Charlie Day.
He's good.
They're two very talented people.
Is this a comedy?
It is a comedy. I'm not going to review it because I've not seen it, so it's not fair, but I will say I've heard very bad things. I've heard that it is not a funny comedy.
You've heard it fits February?
I've heard that it fits February.
I've seen the trailers, and the trailers don't really look funny, but
that's the problem.
I'm like craving a comedy to go to. I want to go to a movie theater and eat some popcorn
and laugh. I recommend a trailer for you then, Dan. It's a bad title. It's called The House. And I just watched this trailer yesterday. It's Will Ferrell and Amy Poehler as a married couple who cannot afford to send their young daughter to college. So they decide to turn their house into a Vegas-style party place.
Casino.
And things get out of hand because in one room they've got adult entertainment. In another room they have like a fight club. And the trailer looks very, very funny. So I would recommend watching that trailer, Dan. If you like it, comes out in a couple months.
Okay. Oh, good. Okay.
Now, Ian has one story to add to our showbiz stuff today about ESPN.
Oh, yes.
Which apparently is having some trouble. And what's odd about that is ESPN is the most successful channel in the history of cable TV. Because when you get cable or satellite TV, you get ESPN. It's part of the basic package. You might have to pay for other sports channels, but you get ESPN just like you do TBS and TNT and CNN.
I always think of TBS. That's the first one that I think. It's just
and
it's,
USA. Yep. Those are all part of your basic cable package. And the way ESPN makes all this money is that they charge high subscription fees to the cable and satellite carriers, so they get paid for the millions and millions of homes they're in, even if nobody ever watches it. But what's happened lately?
They're losing a lot of subscribers. And what I found in this one article is that a couple different carriers now have skinny bundles where it's even less than the basic, tier.
Instead of getting maybe 50 or 60 channels, you get 10 or 12.
And I think ESPN is getting left out a lot of those. And so the people that, want to keep cable but have the, bare minimum amount of, 40 channels or whatever, ESPN's getting. And so, they're hurting.
Now, why is that? Because here's the interesting thing to me. ESPN has the rights to every major sport and quite a few minor ones as well. And live sports is supposed to be one of the things that you can't replicate online. You can't do live sports on demand. People want to see the game. When March Madness comes around, they want to be able to see those games live. So why would people be dumping ESPN, do you think?
Well, I think it's just the general across-the-board cutting cords that everybody's doing. And every other major league sport now has their own service, their own app, where you can just pay, whatever
NBA
it is, $7.99 a month,
app,
MLB at bat. They have their own all services now. So,
there's the NHL channel. There's
are going a la carte on all
major
of
league
these
baseball,
things.
Yeah.
And they've spent a lot of money over the, when at their highest, they paid $2.25 billion to broadcast SEC games. They paid $480 million just to broadcast Wimbledon every year. Apparently all that money is not paying off anymore.
You know what? It's greed. And you know what's going to happen to ESPN?
Oh, no.
Dog monsters.
The dogs with the eyes on their legs.
On their asteroid?
Yes.
Thanks, Chris Berman.
Man.
And there's, you know, the talk, and everybody keeps talking about it. It may get to a point where you can just a la carte pick a channel, say, I want this channel, this channel, this channel. So that's going to even hurt them even more, I think.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah. All right, that's our showbiz stuff for this week. Max has his own show.
What?
Which will essentially be everything we said here today, but not with me.
A lot more 50 Shades talk.
It's
Saturday night, 10 o'clock. I can really get into it.
All right, Max on Movies, Saturday nights, 10 o'clock here on the Big 550 KTRS. You can also follow him on Twitter, at Max on Movies. And I think he did a good enough job. We can invite him back here next week. What do you think?
Oh, heck yeah.
I think so.
I'm not saying anything about the end of the year yet. It's only February, but we'll see.
Thank you very much.
I will say you are the best movie reviewer we've had on the show today.
Today? Yeah.
Yes.
Good. Oh, what, better than Malden? You had Leonard Maltin on.
Second best movie reviewer.
That's right. He forgot about that.
This is the Big 550 KTRS.
Wow.